Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's show, From Ireland to Palestine with Robbie Martin, has been pre-recorded. And I'm giving a big shout out and thanks to my associate producer, Casey J. Caraher.
Hello and welcome to Feed Your Head. Tonight in the first hour we have Rock Martin. We're talking about Ireland to Palestine. So, hello Robbie.
Hello Dupont, how about you?
I am great. It's so good to have you here. We've tried this for weeks now and we finally got it. Yay. So I just before we get into what's going on and the beginnings of all of that, I want to find out, how did you yourself first become aware of the Palestinian people's problems?
Well, I would have first heard about it in the 1980s because of Irish history, which I was very, very fond of in school. We were occupied for some 800 years by the British.
Mm-hmm.
And Northern Ireland is still occupied territory.
Right.
And at the time in the 80s, there was a lot going on up in Northern Ireland. So there was a connection between the IRA and the PLO. So we learned a lot about Palestine because of the connection between the IRA and the PLO. Because they both worked together, they trained together. So when I was learning all about what was happening up in Belfast, up in Derry, we would get the things on the news a lot here in Ireland about Palestine, what was happening in Palestine, but we don't get as much these days.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
The recent attacks on Gaza were on the news, but it's only when there's something major.
Right.
Whereas back in the 80s, we would have got a lot more news and there would have been a lot more talk on, you know, discussion chat shows.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, I see this connection. The Irish people are very gung-ho for Palestine, and it's whenever there's any kind of convoy or anything, you can count on it. The Irish people are very well represented. And so it goes back to that kind of a connection, because you know what it's like to be occupied.
That's it, yeah. And we know what it's like to live under oppression, to be considered second-class citizens in your own country.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be horrible, and I see that would, well, and your love of history, so I see how you were drawn to it. When did you first, say, become active? You're very active in the pro-Palestinian fight now.
Well, it only started in 2010. I had never touched the computer before 2010. And in 2010, I started using a computer.
How old?
For the first time. So I'd liked a page from Ireland, which is the Irish Anti-War Movement page. Now, I had no idea what I was doing online at the time. I was just looking at things that I would have liked, which would be environmental issues, or love animals, particularly orangutans.
Oh, okay.
Well, on March the 16th, 2010, the Irish Anti-War Movement had the whole page was dedicated to a girl who I never heard of before called Rachel Curry, a girl from Washington.
Right, Washington State, U.S., yes.
Who happened to go to Palestine to live out our dream, which was to help children really around the world, impoverished children and children in difficult situations. So when she was in Palestine defending a home of a friend of hers who happened to be a doctor whose house was about to be demolished, and she stood in front of the caterpillar digger, which drove over her deliberately and reversed back over her, killing her.
Yes.
Now, you have to see the whole Rachel Corrie story, and you have to start with the video of her when she's a fifth grade student making a speech, which is how I saw it. That's what I saw first. Then when it goes from her being a child to her being in Palestine and you see what happened to her, it's very, very emotional. It was so emotional that I had to put back on the video of her as a child and listen to her speech again, because it resonates more when you understand what happened to her later.
That's true, because I saw the video and I didn't know about her. I didn't know who she was. And I saw that video when she was a child, and all I could think of was what wonderful parents she must have, you know, who's raised this little girl to feel this way. And then I found out what happened to her, and it's very emotional. Yeah, it is.
And to even prove how good our parents are, they have taken up the cause for death, which is an amazing thing to do when you think about it. They lost their child in Palestine, and now they have gone over there several times. They have their own page set up, their own foundation set up to support the Palestinians.
Yes.
So they really are a wonderful couple.
I've heard from people who have met them that they're really that way, just very unassuming, just great people. But they actually sued the Israeli government.
Yeah, and they were only suing for $1. It wasn't the money, it was about.
Right. They just wanted them to take responsibility. So somebody had told me, a Jewish Facebook friend, it said, well, you know, those Corries, they made tons of money off of this. And it's like, what are you talking about? They've spent a lot for their own plane fare, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, you know, and they sued for $1. It's like they didn't try to get rich off of their daughter's death.
No, they weren't exactly what you would call a poor family.
No.
They're well-to-do, so I don't believe any of that they would be interested in making money off our death. And I would find that quite insulting, in fact, for somebody to say that.
Yeah, that was just totally nuts. But that was what got you going then, when you saw this. Would you give us the name of that website again, Robbie?
Which one?
The Irish, the one where you saw
the Irish Anti-War Movement.
Okay, Irish Anti-War Movement. Okay.
It was from that story of Rachel Corrie that I started making friends who were pro-Palestinian, which would have been mainly non-Palestinians at first. So I think one of the first friends I made was, one was in Sweden and one was in Australia.
Wow.
I just started gathering friends and learning more and more about the whole conflict and starting to understand exactly what Zionism was.
Right. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? How Zionism actually came to be, what it is?
Well, that's the whole idea of Israel came out of the political ideology of Zionism, which was first mooted way back in 1897 by Theodore Herzl. Well, he started the Zionist movement, and the whole idea was to create a Jewish state in Palestine, in the Holy Land. And the Zionist movement started migrating people from around the world to Palestine as early as the 1920s. So a lot of people might think that Israel was created because of the Holocaust, which would be not true.
Not true. Not true.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a means to an end, really. And even in as far back as 1940, the 1940s, the Russians, or the Soviet Union, had given a landmass the size of Switzerland to the Jewish, the Russian Jews, for a homeland for the Jewish people. Wolorzapan, I think it is. I can't remember how to pronounce the name, but it's a rather large country, and it's been there since the 1920s, and it is still inhabited by Jewish people. And a lot of people don't know about that.
Then why, since the Soviet Union gave that to the Jewish people, why then did they have to go and steal Palestine?
Well, it's got to do with all this biblical stuff that that God promised the land to the Jews, and it's also got to do with this building of the Temple Mount in where Al-Aqsa Mosque sits now. And this, I believe, is the dream of the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds, who are the wealthiest, probably bankers in the world, Jewish bankers.
Yeah.
And it is the Rothschild family who want to build the new Temple Mount, exactly where Al-Aqsa Mosque is sitting now. So that means Al-Aqsa Mosque has to be demolished for them to build our temple.
I can understand why people get fed up with the book religions. Really.
Religion does tend to make people a little bit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people kind of forget the message and worship the creed.
Yeah, that's the problem. The now we do know that some of the Orthodox Jews, because occasionally we'll see the pictures of them protesting, and they have the signs and all, and they say that they are not supposed to have a land.
Exactly, and that's what's in their Bible, the Torah, that they have not to stay in exile until the second coming of the Messiah.
Right.
Now, unless Bibi Netanyahu thinks he's the Messiah, which I wouldn't be a bit surprised by, because he's an absolute nutcase. But then again, all the other Jews are Zionist Jews, would have to believe that either he or someone else is the Messiah, or they just don't really believe in their own religion.
Yeah, well, it's sort of convoluted, and that what Zionism itself is not a religion. Some people, you know, mistakenly think it is, but it's completely like a political organization.
Yeah, it's a political ideology, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a based on nationalism, I guess. Yeah. So after the 40, so I mean, okay, you say that there's still Jewish people living in the land that
the Soviets
was given, that the Soviets gave them back then, but all these other people then drifted or were shipped to Palestine. And now I know some of that was just plain because the U.S., and as I understand it, Britain, several other countries didn't want them after the Second World War.
Well, a lot of countries wouldn't take them in as refugees. Even here in Ireland, we didn't take many at all. I don't know why that is.
I don't know why either.
It's just unexplainable, I suppose.
But so they went to Palestine, where the British had the mandate, evidently, at the time. Then when, like, the Hotel David and different things happened, that bombing, Britain just left.
Well, they left after the Haganah, or the Aragon gang, one of them executed a British soldier woman.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went to retrieve the body of this particular soldier, it was his body was booby trapped. And it was supposed to be after that incident, when a few more people died trying to retrieve the body, that the British
Okay. Yep.
which is strange when you think about it, because the IRA have been doing a lot worse than that for 20, 40 years up in Northern Ireland, and they're still occupying Northern Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I think there was more to it than just the fact that the Haganah and Airgun gangs were terrorizing the British soldiers as well as the Palestinians over in Palestine at that point.
Okay. And then, like, the West didn't know about the oil off the coast and all this, or they'd have been there much sooner. So many Palestinians right then were chased out of their homes, and we still today hear from some of them who have keys to their houses.
Well, most of them have kept them. That's one thing that they've stuck with all through time, is the families hand that key down to the children, and then it's handed down to the grandchildren. They're not letting go, and they're right to you. Because, I mean, like, it's their home. They've only been out of it for 64 years at the most.
Right. I mean, and that just never fails to tear me up. I mean, that, you know, because the hope is so alive that they can go back. And now they're trying to say that people who were chased out totally out of the country can't go back. You know, there's no right of return. And...
Well, there's people still being denied. People, Palestinians leave the occupied territory for more than 5 years, then Israel won't let them back in.
Yeah.
So it's a slow ethnic cleansing that's going on, and it's a multifaceted ethnic cleansing. There's more than one way they're trying to clean out the Palestinian indigenous people from their own land.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did that Golda Meir said something about that was a land without a people for people without a land?
Yep.
And, you know, that was such a piece of bullshit that came out of her mouth. We've all seen, well, most of us, the people who care, whatever, have seen those wonderful pictures of Palestine and the Palestinians, like in the 1920s. And the beautiful homes, the clothes, I mean... What a happy group. And
there are Palestinian Muslims, Christians, and Jews all living together, coexisting together with no problems whatsoever.
Yes.
There are many stories being told by the people who used to live there, including the Jewish people, that would be more than happy to have their Muslim neighbor or their Christian neighbor mind their children while they went off somewhere, or vice versa, where the Muslims would be more than happy to leave their children with the Jewish people or the Christian people, and there was never any trouble.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, people definitely do get along and can get along before you get governments and political entities involved.
I'm religious extremists.
Oh, and, yeah.
I don't believe most of them are religious at all. I think they're just using the religion, which is something the Orthodox Jews will say about the Zionists, that they hijacked Judaism.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yes.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of people, just like with anything, that don't think for themselves, and they're so willing to believe... authority figure.
Yeah, any bullshit at all, basically.
Pretty much. I mean, and that's it. I fight a lot with this Jewish person who lives right out of Jerusalem, who tells me how happy the Palestinian people are. And it's like, I don't know where, because I think basically he's a good man. I don't think that he's intentionally lying to me. I think he believes it.
I think the part of the problem there is in Israel, education is very much the same as in America, where it's more indoctrination rather than education.
Yes, I agree, because I know it is here in the U.S. And so I'm thinking that. But I keep, you know, I look at a map, and Israel is, well, I mean, they've taken over Palestine. But if you just take the whole of Palestine, not just West Bank and Gaza, but the whole piece, it's so tiny, and it seems like people would know what's going on. But like you said, they're indoctrinated. So.
And as well, the mass media is very much controlled as well, where in America especially and in the United Kingdom, it's very, the news media is very biased towards Israel. They very rarely tell a true story about what's happening in Palestine. It's always the Palestinians that have started the trouble. Like the recent attacks on Gaza, the BBC and most of the American media have all said, oh no, it was the Palestinians that fired it, which is not true.
Right, like the Palestinians fired another rocket. My God, the Palestinians have no army, no navy, no air force. And they have a few homemade rockets, and thank God they're getting some from elsewhere. I mean, they're trying to. But, I mean, it's nothing compared to what Israel does to them.
Exactly, and Israel is using illegal weapons in Palestine. They're dropping white phosphorus. They drop white phosphorus on schools, schools that were occupied with children who were in school. They did that in Operation Cast Lead. They're dropping dime bombs, which are illegal as well. They dropped plenty of what you call them, the depleted uranium bombs.
Mm-hmm. The white phosphorus stuff that burns your skin, and
yes.
It doesn't stop.
And even when you find a particle of a white phosphorus bomb on the ground and move your foot on it, it'll light up again. Like a child who could come across a cylinder from a white phosphorus bomb that doesn't look like it's anything but a bit of dirt, they could rub their foot on it and their foot would be burned. So like it keeps on causing damage long after it's exploded.
Right. I mean, which is what, not any weapon, no weapons are moral, okay? But if you want to go like on a scope of immoral, that's absolutely horrible. And so much of what the Israeli military uses is from the U.S. that, I mean, those of us who know are very ashamed that, you know, this is going on. We have a big disconnect because there's so many Zionist media owners and things like that in this country.
But you also have a problem in America with Christian Zionism.
Yes. And you're talking about the extremists, and that's it, because they also they want to see Armageddon, and they're going to do everything they can to bring it about.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, they want to see the end of the Jewish people, and yet they're backing them up in Israel because they want to see the Armageddon come.
Yeah, that is crazy. But they are. And then we have that AIPAC, which pretty much owns a lot of our senators and representatives.
Yes.
So it's very hard to fight against Israel here. Now, this last Operation Cloud Pillar, whatever they it got a little more media attention in this country. And that was something we were all very happy about. Then, when we had a couple of weeks ago this wonderful decision at the UN.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Robbie?
Well, it's funny. You've 149 countries that supported the bid, 41 countries abstained, and 9 countries said no. The 9 countries that said no were the obvious, America and Israel.
Yeah.
Then 3 or 4 of them most people would never have even heard of. They're small, little, tiny little island nations.
Right, in the Pacific.
Yep.
Yeah. But Canada also.
Well, Canada, the problem there is not the people, it's the
corporate government.
It's that establishment. And if you look at the Australians, what's her name now? The Australian Prime Minister, she wanted to vote no. But people in her own party said, if you vote no, we're going to bring down the government.
Right.
They decided they abstained rather than vote. So, like, Australia is split, but it's the politicians that are in the pockets of the Zionists, the wealthy Zionists, that are the ones that are the problem. They're the ones that are keeping this occupation going.
Mm-hmm. Because you always have to go back to where's the money.
Yes. So, and this is a big move, I believe, for Palestine, this UN bid that was accepted. It gives them a chance to go to the International Criminal Court.
Yes.
Which was the big reason why Israel and America didn't want to go. So what basically Israel and America are saying is, well, don't want Palestine to get the bid because we know Israel is guilty of crimes.
Right, right.
And human rights abuses. But I also believe as well America wouldn't want them to go to the ICC because as well it's a made in USA on all the bombs that are dropping on Gaza.
That's right. Yeah, from the tear gas canisters to the bombs, it's all coming from here. Or with our money, the U.S. gives Israel $3 million a day. Oh.
Well, really, if you look at it from a different perspective, OIPAC is actually paying for all that because OIPAC buys the senators in America.
Mm-hmm.
To then approve of all the loans to or the aid, they call aid. How can you call it? Bloody blown up people aid. And they give the aid then to Israel, and basically it's the money that the Zionists have given to the political donations for all these politicians that is paying for the thing, even though it's the taxpayers' money. It is basically OIPAC funding the Israeli military, which is illegal, I do believe, in America.
Yeah. It is. And, like, you know, some people have said that AIPAC should register as a foreign agent.
Definitely
they should. But instead, I mean, they give people vacations to Israel. You know, they send them to the beach, and they have lovely beaches, and, you know, on and on. And it's so obvious, but yet nothing is done. Just like the UN itself has something like, isn't it 65, 66 resolutions against Israel, Robbie?
That's more resolutions than Iran, Iraq, Libya, Korea put together. And look at all the sanctions on the wars that have been waged on these countries.
Right. And yet nothing happens.
Not one single sanction against Israel.
No. And so right there, we know that. And the UN is... I know a lot of people just think it should totally be dismantled and, you know, something else come in its place. And I don't know if that would do any good. It might if the U.S. didn't have final say over so much.
Yes, the problem is the veto.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. If they got rid of the veto, it would work a lot better. It would actually be able to do what it's supposed to do, which is conflict resolutions. That's what it was set up for originally.
Yes.
And they can't resolve conflicts when somebody can turn around and go, no, we're putting in a veto. Let the conflict carry on.
Yeah.
Which is basically what's happening.
Well, yeah, that's what's happening now. After you became aware, after the Rachel Corrie full page and everything, and you said that you were just getting on the computer then.
Yes, I only started.
And
I've had no formal training whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's great. I mean, you are there, and you have many friends. Like you said, you started out with a friend from Sweden and Australia that were pro-Palestinian. Now you have so many people around the world.
Yeah.
We just say Robbie Martin. They say, oh, yeah, he's one of my friends. You know, Robbie's doing this or that. And now, you have not been to Palestine, but it's in your plans, I bet, isn't it?
I always want to go to Gaza first.
Yes.
I have a particular affection for Gaza. I don't know why. It's probably because I see them as much the same as the people in Belfast here, whereas I'm in Dublin. I was looking at Belfast from the outside back in the 80s, and I went up to Belfast to see what life was like up there under the occupation, and it wasn't nice at all. I had to go through a lot of security barriers like they do on the West Bank, where I had all these people with English accents asking me, what am I doing in Belfast? And I was saying to them, well, hang on a second, where are you from? Birmingham. I'm from Dublin. I'm Irish. This is Ireland. You know, it's just crazy to think that a foreigner can actually stop you in your own country.
Yes.
And tell you, you can do this or you can't do that or you can't go there. And it's mind-boggling how it goes on.
Yeah, that has got to just be such an irony. And I'm just amazed at how many of the Palestinians are not bitter. They're not happy, but a lot of them, I mean, they don't have a raging hate.
No.
For Israelis, maybe for the Zionists. I mean, and there's a definite difference because I understand that. But still, they can feel some compassion, and they say, you know, if we can live together, kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of Palestinian friends, a hell of a lot in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
A good deal in the West Bank, and of a lot in the diaspora.
Yeah.
And I get on great with them. They're lovely people. And they're like Ireland was way back before Ireland became a greedy nation like the rest of the world, and we went through all bloody materialism, and now we're up Shea Creek without a paddle. But here, like, people would, a stranger could knock on your door, you'd bring them in, you'd feed them, you know, if the car was broken down, you'd let them use the phone. And it's the same if you go to Palestine. I've heard it from loads of people that have gone to Palestine. The people bring you in, they'll feed you, even though they haven't got much.
Yeah.
They'll feed you, they'll let you stay in their house, they'll look after you, you know. They're kind beyond kindness, nearly.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've managed to keep that, and that's wonderful and amazing that they have. Right now, after the ceasefire, quote, ceasefire, truce, it seems that only applies to the Palestinians. The Zionists have kept on. They fire at the fishermen. They kidnap the fishermen. They've killed several people.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we won't hear anything about it, really, until some Palestinian fires a rocket, and then it'll be the Palestinians that broke the truce.
Yeah, and they don't say Palestinians either, they say terrorists.
Terrorists, exactly, right.
And they're not the ones flying over Gaza every night, or over Israel, like the Israelis are flying over Gaza every night. They fly over Gaza every single night with their planes and their drones.
Yeah.
The F-16 go by and make the phonic boom, which sounds like an explosion. This is at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning when kids are asleep. They're being woken up. They've already suffered terribly, the children over there, with the two recent attacks, which were cast lead and pillar of smoke. They're traumatized as it is. And these planes are still flying over at that hour at night and waking these children up. And you can only imagine how terrify them poor children must be. So that is terrorism.
Oh, it's complete terrorism.
It's the terrorist.
Well, they say that I think something like 90-some% of the children, and it may be adults too, in Gaza, suffer from that post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah. So.
The thing is, as well, is that they don't have the people there who can help the children with these problems.
Yeah.
They can't get people in that are trained, because obviously they don't have resources and it's hard enough to get into Gaza.
Right.
So I mean, like, it's just piling misery upon more misery and hardship upon more hardship, and it's easy to see who's the guilty ones.
Oh yeah, it really is. You know, when you talk to people who can't do certain things with their food and all because their electricity supply is only maybe 8 hours a day during certain periods, and you know, on and on, and if they use generators, it is very unsafe.
Yes.
And getting parts for them.
A couple of occasions this year where children have died because of fires in the house because they have to use candles when the electricity's on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's an added problem to the whole situation for people, particularly in Gaza.
Yeah, I've had friends who are in university there who study sometimes by candlelight, and they talk about those drones. That, you know, I mean, they just hear them continually. You know, to go through that and still be hopeful is wonderful. And they're very smart. They study a lot, and even by candle.
They're very high rates of scholarships in Palestine and Gaza. Oh, like it's hard to believe that they can actually study with all that noise going on around them all the time, and not being able to leave Gaza and not being able to get proper food, like with the amount of things that are banned from Gaza by designers, because they've banned school papers, cement, building materials,
right.
Books.
Yeah. So many things like that, and a lot has been smuggled in through the tunnels from Egypt, but those tunnels are very, they're pretty shaky too. I mean, they're dangerous. I think there's been 130-some people killed in the tunnels just from them collapsing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Egypt has closed some of them. Well, Israel, I guess, has forced Egypt too. I'm not sure how that worked, but some of them, and then some were bombed. So it's even harder to get the things through the tunnels.
Yeah, and as you said, even with the fishing is one food source, and they're supposed to be allowed now out as far as 6 miles, even though international law states that they're allowed to fish to 12 miles, I think it is, beyond our coastline.
Mm-hmm.
And the Israelis just keep coming along, harassing them, shooting the boat.
Right.
As you see, kidnapping the people off the boats.
Yeah. I think the Israelis supposedly were enforcing a 3-mile limit, but I heard that somebody did get shot at when they were only out about a mile. So
they just harass them all the time. And that's like what I'm saying about the multifaceted ethnic cleansing that's going on. This is all designed to persecute the Palestinians so much that they hope that the Palestinians will actually live themselves, so the Zionists won't have to kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
Which would make them look bad, obviously.
Well, the fact that the water, because they don't have the system set up, because they can't get material, like you said, in there, so the water's contaminated, a great deal of it.
Israel also destroyed our purification facilities over there.
And I did read recently that anemia is very high on the list of conditions, from pregnant mothers to the children. They're missing a lot, and then you put the contaminated water there, and you know, the fact that we've seen the videos of people who are trying to farm what little land hasn't been destroyed, and they can't get within 300 meters of the border because Israel forbids it, and they will shoot them.
They have killed them dead.
They have killed them there. And in fact, recently after the I did read that after the UN vote, there was some celebration going on, and they had some flags, and also they were in the area that supposedly they could be in, and they a couple people were killed from the those watchtowers things along, because they don't care. The young Israeli soldiers.
Well, they'll never be held to account for committing murder, which is basically what they're doing.
No.
And that the Israeli government will always back them up, just as they deal with the settlers, the illegal settlers, and I prefer to call them squatters. So from now on, I'll be saying squatters, not settlers.
Okay, that's a good one, yes, because settlers, you think of people with a good goal or something.
But you're more or less legitimizing them by calling them settlers.
Hmm. But no, you're right. Squatters, yeah, they're illegally.
They're people of many different nationalities who are being imported in to take the place of Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
So they're squatters, basically. They often in the West Bank, they evict families from their homes to show them papers to say that they bought the property of the owners, which are falsified papers. The Israeli courts back it all up. The settlers are backed up by the Israeli army and police. Settlers attack, they cut down their trees. They do price tag attacks on not just mosques, but Christian churches, graveyards, people's houses. And they're basically telling the Palestinians, get out, or we're coming to kill them.
Right. Oh, and I hear that they turn their dogs loose on them if they're trying to be in the fields or something. And yeah, they destroy their orchards. If they have any animals left, they destroy it. And the Israeli courts back them.
They'll either steal the animals or kill them.
Yeah.
And it's all done under the watch of the Israeli military, because the Israeli military are there with them. So they're giving carte blanche to do as they please. Doesn't matter what they do. It's all illegal. Everything they're doing is they're illegally in the first place. But Israel, that's another part of their ethnic cleansing, by having these squatters come in and terrorize the people in the West Bank.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, this is the entertainment.
The funny thing is, another subject we should touch on is the Palestinian prisoners. You have Israel, which, once again, completely illegally kidnapped children off the streets. Often they'll raid villages in the West Bank at the same thing, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, wake entire families. They'll take the children, handcuffed, blindfolded. They'll bring them to a settlement force for questioning, where you have all these racist squatters who are all extremists. So kids are obviously going to be terrified. Then they're taken into Israel itself. They're brought to a military court, once again illegal. They're interrogated without an adult present, once again that's illegal. Then they're tried for throwing stones. Some of these kids are as young as 10 years of age.
Yeah.
They're getting locked up for 6 months, 12 months, 2, 3 years.
And their parents can't visit them sometimes.
Exactly. And there's a lot of the prisoners who are in administrative detention, i.e. that is, they have been put into prison without having any proper court proceeding taking place.
Right. Right, so it's just detention.
Yeah, it's all illegal. And once again, this is persecution. The whole idea is aimed at trying to drive the Palestinians out, making life so intolerable that the Palestinians will just pack up and go. But the Palestinians won't go because they're strong people.
Yeah. And they're in the right, and they know it, and they've taught their children this. I mean, the young people are just very adamant this is our land.
Well, the thing about the Crown Stones is if the British had done that up in Northern Ireland, because that's a lot of the youth up in Northern Ireland throw stones at the British patrols, and for a long time, not only stones, other things as well. But if the British had tried any children in a military court for throwing stones and locked them up without any proper evidence or without going through proper judicial procedures, they would have been held before the UN and sanctions would have been placed on them.
Exactly. The world would have.
Well, they would have. And,
yeah.
And America would have come in and said, no, Britain, you're not left to do that.
Yeah.
No, because there's a huge Irish diaspora in America. There's something like 40 million people in America that claim Irish heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the British wouldn't have been left away with that, yet the Israelis are.
Yeah. They just, it's strange because other places it's similar. A couple of years ago, especially Kashmir, there was a lot of the stone pelting, and the, you know, because Kashmir is occupied by India, and a lot of people were in prison. And, you know, I mean, the Kashmiris have a very close link with the Palestinians also, because they were occupied in 1948, and they were told that they would be given self-determination, which they never have had. So it's they feel a kinship with what's going on, and they are not persecuted to the extent that the Palestinians are, but there have been times when they have been.
Yes, there have been occasions where the Indians have gone in.
There's something like 700,000 Indians occupying, I mean, the military occupying Kashmir. And, you know, that's a big force. And they were trained, some of them were trained by the Israelis.
Yeah.
So, but no, Israel, they can get by with that kind of thing. And the U.S. just ignores it.
Well, the problem has always been the fact that the United States blocks any kind of measures to bring Israel to bear for their crimes and to try and prevent them from expanding their settlements, which they are doing again. And Netanyahu announced another load of new settlements to be built after the UN vote.
Basically,
they're sticking two fingers up to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Something like 3,000 more they're planning. So they haven't stopped. The Zionists haven't stopped at all. This vote they were mad about, and they'll probably continue to take it out on Palestine, but they aren't stopping their actions. It's sort of like the dying throes, because they are going to go down. It's going to happen.
Well, the great thing about the recent attack on Gaza, the Pillar of Smoke attack, the amount of support Palestine got throughout the world.
Yes.
Particularly in America.
Yes.
There were a lot of rallies, a lot of big rallies. I've even seen, like, the Occupy Wall Street Facebook page. They came out in full support of the Palestinians. People are starting to see, a lot more people are starting to see the reality of what's happening on in the ground in Palestine and who is the guilty party.
Yeah, and people are rethinking that stupid word terrorist.
There's one thing that just I had to laugh at was when Obama came out and said the exact same thing that the Israelis are saying. What country would put up with thousands of rockets being poured into their land? And there's him sending his drones into Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Yemen,
Somalia, Pakistan. Yeah. I mean, you know, that was definitely a time when he could, if he couldn't say anything smart, he should have really kept his mouth shut. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Ambassador and police.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know that the U.S. is droning at least 7 countries that I know, but so probably more. And but for him to say that, yeah, about the rockets, and yeah.
And him being the one that's sending the name to all these other countries.
Yeah, doing it, and with no signs of cutting back or stopping.
No, and again, this is, as far as I know, all illegal under international law, what they're doing.
Right.
Drones. And yet nobody's saying boo.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they keep using this, Iran has, they're thinking, you know, maybe this and this, all this military, I mean, all this nuclear stuff. Thing is, Iran signed the Non-Proliferation Act, and Israel didn't.
Iran have allowed inspectors in, Israel haven't.
Yeah, Israel's got over 200 nuclear warheads, they think, or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's so ironical, and now, you know, what is it about that small slice of land in the east of the Mediterranean that, you know, has gotten the U.S. to this point where they will actually support it?
For the U.S., it's their gateway into the Middle East to all the...
To where they can take resources from, natural resources from other countries. And I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Oh, goodness. Okay, no. Yeah, I'm gonna. I'll tell Casey that there was a spot like 7 minutes before we're done where he's just got to go back because this phone. I don't know how to, whatever. I will call him back, but it's not at this moment. So okay, we're gonna have like 7 minutes to wrap it up. So okay, here we go. Well, Robbie, we've got like 7 minutes left. What would you want to say to people who this may be their first actual exposure to what's going on lately in Palestine?
What I would say to them is to try and, if they're on Facebook, try and make friends with some Palestinians. There's a wide variety of videos out there that can be easily viewed of the attacks on Gaza in particular, or the way the Palestinians are treated at all these checkpoints. They can check all the UN resolutions against Israel that have not been heeded. I would also ask them all to support the boycott and divestment and sanctions movements.
Okay, so that I mean that's quite a bit, because yeah, we've got time. You want to talk just a little bit about the BDS?
Yes, well, BDS is boycotting, divesting from, and sanctions on companies that deal with Israel. You have a lot of companies, the likes of Starbucks, Coca-Cola, that all help fund the Israeli military. But Israel's biggest industry is by far the cutting polished diamond industry, which doesn't get a lot of attention. That supplies the Israeli military with approximately $1 billion per year, keeps the Israeli military running. So if people checked out their BDS pages on the internet, on Facebook, and they can find out exactly what companies they could be boycotting.
Yeah.
There are also cultural boycotts where we recently persuaded Stevie Wonder.
Yes, that was impressive. Yeah, good for Stevie.
Not to get a gig for the IDF. And simply by going onto his Facebook page and informing them about what is happening in Israel, Palestine, and who's the guilty person, and why would he be somebody who spoke out against apartheid in South Africa? Why would he be supporting apartheid in Israel? So he changed his tune. He's decided not to play that. But there are a lot of artists that go to Israel, and that's what we do a lot on Facebook, is when we find out somebody's going to play in Israel, we start a campaign to persuade them not to go by asking them, by telling them the truth about what's happening.
Right. So that and many people have chosen not to appear. I mean, and it's not that they were bad people when they made the plans, but they did not really understand.
No, they didn't. They don't get to see the realities on the ground in Palestine.
Yeah.
Of how the Palestinians are treated.
Right.
So it's not just Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. It's also the Palestinians that are in the occupied part that is called Israel. If they're treated as second-class citizens, there's some 30-odd discriminatory laws against Palestinians, against Arabs in particular, in Israel.
Mm-hmm. It's very apartheid, the country. And in fact, you did touch on the fact that they would have been paying people to come from other countries to these the squatters, like you call them.
Yes.
And then recently, though, there were a bunch of black Africans that they were trying to throw out because they're racist.
And the funny thing is, I think it's the Ethiopian blacks are actually Jewish.
Yes.
So the Semitic people like the Palestinians. And yeah, if anybody criticizes Israel, that's called anti-Semitic. Yeah, here's Israel terrorizing and persecuting the Semitic Palestinians, kicking the black Semitic rules of Israel because they don't want blacks in Israel either. And the most anti-Semitic thing I have ever heard in my life is when they criticize, when a Jewish person criticizes Israel for their policies, they're called a self-hating Jew.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, that has to be the most anti-Semitic term I've ever heard, because the term anti-Semitism is defined as the hatred of Jews. And these are calling normal, well-adjusted people who are Jewish people who criticize Zionism, rightly so, and they claim them to be self-hating Jews.
Self-hating, yeah.
That's how despicable these bloody Zionists are.
Yeah, it is so, so convoluted. But I have such a good feeling, because it seems like, you know, a couple of weeks ago the world spoke at the UN, and even if it doesn't have real immediate effects, it has shown that people are concerned and people are learning. And I think that's going to be what turns the tide.
Yeah, and the majority of the world spoke in favor of Palestine. I think it's the first big step.
Yeah, yeah. It was very emotional for a bunch of us around the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yes, 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 finally. And people were dancing in the streets. It was very good. So
I was dancing in your room.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I was dancing in my house. So hey, wherever we are. But Robbie, our time is up, and I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about Palestine and the Irish connection. And I hope that you get to travel there very soon, my friend.
I hope so. And thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.